Christians need to develop their understanding, their knowledge, and their ability to reason carefully about all the things we encounter in this world.
But everybody has a philosophy they live by. Everybody uses logic. And if you're not aware of these things and able to intentionally think through, you're going to probably use faulty logic and bad philosophy.
You study a little philosophy, you might get snowed and think, yeah, you wouldn't be a Christian. But you study some more, you think, oh, wait a minute. No, actually.
Yeah.
There's really good reasons from philosophy to be a Christian.
Welcome, Dr. Jonathan Strand, to this episode of a podcast we don't have a name for, where I introduce and interview a number of interesting people who come to our campus, and we mean that interesting in a very good way.
Oh, so, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome to campus. Good to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
So I am a philosophy professor. I'm a professor at Concordia University of Edmonton in Alberta, Canada. But I grew up here, in nearby. My father was the first president of the AFLC, so I grew up in New Hope and Plymouth, went to the local schools here. When I was, graduating, probably in grade 12 in high school, just by accident, I was listening to the radio and I heard Francis Schaeffer, and I'd never heard of him or anything like it. And I was totally taken and I realized this is philosophy. Wow, this is really cool. And so I went to the University of Minnesota, majored in philosophy because I was interested in it, but also because I was thinking about maybe I was receiving a call to be a pastor like my dad had been, was. Majored in philosophy there, did 1 year of Bible school here, and then when I was finished with my BA, I came to the seminary here, still considering a call, but also thinking I might go on in philosophy, but I thought I was most interested in philosophy of religion. And so it's a really good idea to know some theology if you're doing philosophy of religion. So I thought either way, it'd be a good idea to learn some theology in seminary. So I completed the MDiv program here. And when I was finishing it, I thought, well, okay, am I going to go on in philosophy or take a call to be a pastor? And I thought, well, I'll apply to some graduate schools and see if anybody will take me. And so I went back to the University of Minnesota where I did my BA and talked to some of my old professors. One of them was Jasper Hopkins, who was a medieval scholar. And I asked him, well, where should I go? I'm interested in philosophy of religion. He said, Notre Dame is by far the best in philosophy of religion. No contest. There's some other good places. So I applied to Notre Dame and several other places, and I got a full ride at Notre Dame. And so I thought, I got the answer.
Yeah.
So I went there. Elvin Plantinga was there, who's a big name, really the most famous Christian philosopher, accomplished Christian philosopher in the last number of decades. And I got to study with him. He was my dissertation mentor. And so that was fabulous. I would have never left if I didn't have to make a living. I loved it. It was intellectually exhilarating. Studying with people who are committed Christians and also unbelievably fabulous philosophers, really, really brilliant people, all the insights they had and all the arguments I could consider and have fun with. When I was finishing there, I got a job teaching at Valparaiso University in Indiana, but I was just term contracts. It wasn't a tenure track job. And so I was there 3 years. In that third year, I got a call from Richard Kramer, who was the president of Concordia in Edmonton. And he had been a Valpo alumnus and a philosophy major, so he still knew some people down there. And he called the philosophy department chair, said they were looking to hire a philosopher in Edmonton. And did he know anybody? And so the chair referred to me, and I seemed to be what they were looking for. So Richard called me, And I went home and told my wife, Ruth, who I met in Bible school here. And she said, Edmonton, you're not serious, are you? That's another country, you know.
And so you settled on Sherwood Park.
Yes. So we ended up living in Sherwood Park, settling there, and which is just outside Edmonton. And our three children were all born in Indiana, but they were quite young when we moved up there. And so I've been a professor at Concordia then for 31 years, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. It's so much there to talk about, too. So you mentioned Ruth. Tell us about your family.
Yes. So Ruth is from Houghton, Michigan, and we met in Bible school. And really, within the first week, we got to know each other.
Yeah.
And
one of the kindest people I know.
Ah, yes. Yes, absolutely. So it took me a long time to actually ask her out. No. I asked her to homecoming. I asked her an hour before the event, which was a unique way to do it. But anyway, then I asked her out to a hockey game again, a North Stars game, when North Stars were no good and there was nobody else there. But anyway,
anyway, but who cares? Right?
But anyway, we were So when we dated then while I was in university, as the Canadians put it, and we married when I finished my BA and was going into seminary. And then our first son, Justin, was born in Valparaiso, or no, not in Valparaiso, in South Bend, mm-hmm. while I was in graduate school. And then Alicia was born 3 years later. And then Aaron was born when I was in Valparaiso. So, and then we all moved to Canada.
And how many grandkids?
We have three grandkids. Justin has two twin boys that are 4 years old, Jesse and Miles, who have a lot of energy, do not stop. They keep moving.
Yeah.
And then now a 1 year old grandson, Peter.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of fun with them. They all our kids still live in the Edmonton area, and so we see each other all the time and we get to babysit and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's great. So, and you like hunting, hiking?
I love the outdoors.
Not fishing?
Fishing too, right. Any camping, hunting, fishing, hiking, right.
Yeah.
So there's fabulous trout fishing in the foothills of the Rockies there in Alberta. It's really, I don't get to do it nearly enough. I've got this job that gets in the way.
Yeah,
so,
it does.
And same with hunting. I've done a lot of hunting. It's hunter heaven up there, frankly. But anyway, yeah, and I have a job. So, but we've eaten a lot of wild game.
Yeah, yeah. And I've enjoyed a meal or two at your home with that. Ruth is kind and generous, good with hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly would not consider us to be philosophical peers, you know, but I at least know the conversation. We can talk.
Right.
And I think once in a while I would glance and I realize, oh, she's done with the philosophical talk now. But very kindly.
Yeah,
and
that's
I know
right.
that because
that's
my,
right.
I too have a wife who puts up with me.
Yeah, right, those, right. But this is I learned that there were all these philosophical things that I love arguing about and talking about, and she's interested in other things.
Yes, yes.
So that provides a good balance in our
as
home.
As time's gone on, Michelle has become more of a philosopher, and so I kind of feel like maybe I'm winning. Not that it's about winning, but no, that's good. So, all right. So what brings you here is that in our program, we have need for people to learn to think about life's most important questions and to think distinctively Christianly about them. And I just described a Christian view of philosophy.
Right.
And it seems like, you know, how many people do we have in our association or in this world who could do that well? And you're someone I've certainly come to respect in that way. And I'm very thankful that you're down here doing this. Now, short of leaving the hunter's paradise and your grandchildren behind in Edmonton, what have we done here to gain from your ability to teach?
Well, I believe in the cause. I mean, there is Christians need to develop their understanding, their knowledge, and their ability to reason carefully about all the things we encounter in this world, not to be misled, and to be able to reason well in their presentation of the law and the gospel and just in everyday life, in politics, everywhere. And so then in the world of higher education, there's lots of problems there, I'll say charitably, lots of bad things. There's lots of bad philosophy in being taught in the universities. And so there's a great need for excellent higher education, including philosophy, done in a biblical context, in a way that respects what we know from because God said it, because God told us certain things, and then we try to understand it a little bit more and try to figure other things out. But there's a great need for institutions like this, and so I want to help. I want to help it succeed in its mission.
Yeah, you sure and are, so. For sure. Well, then thanks for doing that. And you know, short of getting you here in person full-time 52 weeks a year, describe the modality that we're using to make this work.
So mostly I have several years ago, I actually took my intro to philosophy and my intro to logic class, and I recorded all my lectures in little bits and I did this all in the first place to be able to flip the classroom so that the lectures are online. People can watch them at their leisure, do some quizzes about them so they're really engaged, and then reserve the classroom for discussion and that sort of thing. But then I discovered—
Favorite way to teach, by the way. It's much more fun.
Oh, right. So, but then— A real impetus was COVID, where we had to be entirely online. And so what I'd already started to do, I went whole hog on and made the course deliverable in a good way, I think. I mean, when COVID happened, the universities did all kinds of things as best they could, but it, you know, it's not with varying success. I'll just put it that way. But I thought, no, I want to be able to deliver these courses online in a way that's really excellent, as best as can be. So I developed these two courses. And then when we talked a couple of years ago, when you were talking about developing this degree program and you need some formal reasoning courses, I thought, well, I have that.
Yeah.
And it was already produced, right? It was, so the way we're doing it in here is that the class meets in person. Most classes, they'll watch one or two of my short little lectures, and then I'll tune in from Edmonton, video chat, and they'll ask questions and I'll try to explain things. I'll ask questions of them to see if they're understanding and we'll talk that way.
And there's a barrier there, obviously, when you're talking, but we do have people in the classroom to help. And then you being here, you know, once or twice a semester to, you know, that this person actually exists and is not an AI generated.
Right. So this term I came right at the beginning of the semester and I'm going to be back halfway through.
It's always fun to see you on campus as well.
Right.
Okay, so they're both 100 level or so, right?
These are very beginning. Right.
Okay, and the logic, I've watched all the logic classes and all. Okay, it's more or less what my children are learning in upper levels of classical conversations.
Oh, very good.
So it's not.
I'm glad to hear it.
I mean, this is not. So some of this is if you've never had it before and you encounter it as a 20-year-old, it can be daunting. Or worse, if you're a 50-year-old, but everybody has a philosophy they live by. Everybody uses logic, and if you're not aware of these things and able to intentionally think through, you're going to probably use faulty logic and bad philosophy.
That's right.
That's what we're trying to get these students to understand. Right. And I think for the most part, they're appreciative of it. For some people, it's a little bit like, well, what does this have to do with the Bible? And it's like everything. You know, how do you engage? So I really appreciate you being willing to invest in our school, our students, in our program that way. So,
yeah, thanks. My privilege.
Okay, so we're going to hang up shortly, but I got to ask. Okay, so Plantinga.
Right.
First time I'd ever heard that name was you.
Okay.
Okay, but right. then you start reading everything and,
right,
and
right.
productive.
Right.
And he had a brother.
Oh, yeah.
And they're both from Valley City.
Right. Right.
How and it seems like, is everything, does everything ultimately come back to Valley City,
maybe,
North Dakota?
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, right. So his dad was I think psychology professor at, in Valley City.
Valley anyway, City that's State, where they probably.
Live. Yeah, yeah, right. And then, so that's where Alvin Plantinga and family, where he grew up. And then his dad got hired to teach at Calvin College, so they moved there. And then Plantinga studied some at undergraduate level at Calvin, and then ended up going to Yale for his graduate studies. But yeah, he would refer to North Dakota often, actually, when I knew him. And
so I heard several years ago a secular philosopher bemoaning the Plantinga-led takeover of philosophy, Christian philosophy, or making Christianizing secular philosophy programs across the United States through his influence.
Plantinga and others, and we're talking about really accomplished philosophers who are also Christians,
yep.
Across the United States and then elsewhere, but it formed the Society of Christian Philosophers. And it has sort of exploded, and they are sort of promoting the idea of doing philosophy from a Christian point of view, doing philosophy in a way that's consistent with the Christian faith, and they saw the need for it, and so many people entered graduate Christians started going into philosophy in graduate school, like me. I was one of them, right? And then they had these Christian mentors to learn from and mm-hmm. emulate. And that Society of Christian Philosophers is now the largest single interest group in the American Philosophical Association. It's there's a Canadian version that I've been part of. But in many secular departments, despite other people's opposition and mm-hmm. actual active trying to prevent it, but in many secular philosophy departments across North America, there are strong Christians who are very accomplished philosophers, and it's hard to suppress them because their philosophy is really good.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
they compete, right? They they get published. They're very productive, and so it's had an enormous impact. And one of the things it's done is there's this. People used to say, still do say, well, you know, if you're smart and you really know things, well, you would know that Christianity is nonsense. That's what, well, the Society of Christian Philosophers and all these philosophers who are incredibly brilliant and knowledgeable just show that that's nonsense. It is not true that if you're smart, you won't be a Christian. No, actually, you can argue that the other way around.
Okay, so our claim is not that this is what we go by. This is our preferred game that we play. You know, some people like backgammon. Some people like Parcheesi. You know, this is reality.
Yes.
And so you would think that if you were to pursue that philosophically, you would get someplace in the Jesus neighborhood.
Right, right. If you pursue it honestly, which of course we fallen human beings are not always honest. In fact, maybe mostly not.
Yeah.
Right, that we are heavily influenced by our desires. Mm-hmm. So for example, there's a really great philosopher by the name of Thomas Nagel, a great metaphysician, philosopher of mind, and the like, and he. He is so close. You follow his reasoning, his argument, which I think are brilliant, and he's on the right track. And he's so close to, but why aren't you a Christian? I mean, this all leads to, because he argues that consciousness, for example, must be a fundamental part of reality. It's mm-hmm. not just an accidental side effect of evolution or something. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a fundamental. Well, that sounds like God, right? And
or
so
Anthony Flew getting this close.
Yeah, right. But then he says himself, but he doesn't want God to exist. That freaks him out. He doesn't like that. So what happens is people have their desires. And, well, you know, Jesus said something about this. People love darkness rather than light.
Yeah.
Because their deeds are evil, right? And that's the way we are. We kind of don't necessarily always want the truth.
So think how easy it is, though, to bluff. If somebody says, if you're really smart and thinking about these things, then clearly you wouldn't be a Christian. If you don't even know what they're talking about, it's easy to get bluffed.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And they think they know what they're talking about. But actually, as a number of people, if you study a little philosophy, you might get snowed and think, yeah, you wouldn't be a Christian. But you study some more, you think, oh, wait a minute. No, actually.
Yeah.
There's really good reasons from philosophy to be a Christian.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. My undergraduate was engineering physics. And I went, as a new Christian, I would have considered myself a theistic evolutionist, even though that now, thinking philosophically, that doesn't even mean anything, really.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Right,
but,
right.
But I remember sitting in a thermodynamics and statistical mechanics class, and we were looking at, you know, the way we think the universe started, you know, and realizing, wait a second, this is completely metaphysical. This is not science.
Right.
And that just, so why shouldn't I consider the theological claims as valid? Yeah.
Right. Right.
And just having enough in your back pocket to be able to think through those things. That's really what I hope we can accomplish here.
Right.
You also do a little bit on philosophy of science, I know.
That's right. So I never really published in philosophy of science, but I taught philosophy of science a lot over the years, and I really loved it. I learned, sort of was introduced to the field by Ernan McMullen at Notre Dame, who is a priest, actually, and a very accomplished philosopher of science. And I found that the sort of, when you start, and then I'm really interested in logic. So what I was really interested in is how the logic of science works, how you go from what we observe in the lab, so to speak, to drawing these theoretical conclusions. And then it's like, and I wasn't the first person to realize this. Richard Swinburne especially has analyzed this. Well, wait a minute. If you analyze how scientific reasoning works, you can see that you can do this exact same thing in reasoning about God and in theology. You see this evidence, and then the philosophy of science I'm drawn to is Bayesianism. It explains in mathematical terms, actually, how the logic works, how you go from what you observe to your theoretical conclusions.
And classic Swinburne.
So it's, that's right.
And so you look at those presuppositions. I do that when I don't teach nearly as much as I would like or used to. Maybe when I grow up, I can have my employee's dream job.
Right.
But you know, when you really explain, you know, some people aren't going to be into it. But when you really explain how that works, you can see the light bulbs come on. And my favorite is the students who are scientifically inclined. All of a sudden, they understand. Oh, this is for me and us, and I am for us. It's good to see that.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah. And science doesn't usually accomplish nearly as much as we think it does.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, people misunderstand science. I mean, they think it just kind of gives them the truth about things, and they don't really understand the process. And scientists often get things wrong, but this is part of the process. And they focus on the results of science rather than understanding how it works. And if you understand how it works, it's great. I'm a big science
big fan.
But, you know, we can do this in our reasoning in everyday life and all over the place. We do actually, maybe poorly a lot, we do this, but we don't actually realize what we're doing. And, okay, once you understand how it works, man, it's really useful.
Yeah. Well, so much more we could talk about, I know, but eventually one has to clean up the dishes and but Jonathan, thank you so much for your investment in our school and your love and care for our students and for what you're bringing to our program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure. Absolutely. My privilege.
Thank you.
So.